so good to see you.
And Dr. Manyoni, how are you?
Unmute, Jefferson. You must unmute. Unmute, Jefferson. Unmute that microphone. The deputy minister is greeting you. Jefferson.
My Jefferson. Kyalebuwa.
Chairman, are you safe where you are?
I am in the office.
Oh,
the safest place. I'll say blue. I'm not in any bedroom.
Okay,
amen. Hey, what's up,
You look very good.
Imbiza yempilo, ngisaphuza imbiza yempilo. Mama umkhalipi. Thank you, man. Yeah. No.
Umkhalipi, are you sorted now?
Yeah, yes, Jefferson. I'm sorted now. Where are these guys? I see they must move this thing, man. We are waiting.
Yes, let me tell
you. We are here. Good evening, Chairperson. There are people from the IEC here. This is the Vice Chairperson. Good evening, Deputy Minister. Good evening, Chairperson Manyoni. I hope you're all well, and members of the committee.
Welcome, Commissioner. I was going to formally introduce you, but welcome.
Thank you.
This people is referring to our colleague, Honorable Mkhalipi, our colleague.
Chairperson.
I agree you are referring to our colleague. Where are these people?
Oh, where is my favorite people in the world? I see.
They are all around here. I see the CEO is here as well.
And he knows. He owes me the CEO.
I must protect the poor CEO now.
Mama Mool. He knows. Mama Mool, come here.
greetings.
CEO, do you want me to tell the committee what you have done to me?
No, you know, the matters that belong to two people, which must not
don't come in the public.
Okay, I'll forgive the CEO, Geche.
Okay.
Then I'll get him.
we need to start this meeting. I hope all of you are safe, as the Deputy Minister calls it. I want to welcome the colleagues. Just for the purpose of our record, I see Honorable Hronebald is here. Honorable Brink is here. Honorable Direko is here. Then Honorable Spies, welcome. Honorable Beck, Honorable Spies, she's here. Honorable Mkalipi, she's here. Honorable Mpumza is here. Honorable Kreza is here with us. And Honorable Kavanchava is here. Those are the colleagues that are in our midst. Also, let me take this opportunity to welcome Commissioner Love from the Commission, together with the CEO and the two deputy CEOs in our midst. Then I want to welcome the chairperson of the Municipal Demarcation Board, Mr. Thabo Manyoni, together with this, the team that I see, the CEO is here in our midst. Yes, seemingly the two of them. Then Chancellor Stofile might be a few minutes late due to some meetings, commitments, but he's going to join us. Let me also welcome the COO, Mr. Lance Joel. Then I want to also deal with the apologies for now. The apologies that I'm having, the apology from the minister herself. Welcome, Deputy Minister Fumaliso. You are here in our midst.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Is the minister. That's the apology due to prior commitments. Also, the DG will attend, join the meeting late due to cluster meeting that is running late. We also have the Dr. Naidu will be leading the team and is the one that's going to present. We still have a standing apology of Honorable Mabika. He's still off sick. We wish him well. So I should think then that's what constitutes our meeting attendees, including those other guests that are in our midst. They are also welcome. Let me start with the house rules. I don't want to be in chaos with some of you, as you heard the deputy minister saying earlier on a lighter note. I think we both know the house rules. You need to always put your video and microphone on mute unless you are recognized by the chairperson. Also, there is a raise your hand icon that you can use if you want to, you want the chairperson to recognize you. If you your gadget doesn't have such, you can always alert me on your chat, on the chat group, that you want to speak. I'll then recognize you. Can we avoid having people around us as we are attending these meetings? Some of my colleagues are still recovering from the trauma, including our deputy minister, from what we experienced last week in the committee meeting. We are mindful it's in the evening, but can we try that wherever we are? There are no other people that can then, because sometimes colleagues forget to mute their videos, then we'll see some things that we're not supposed to see. Honorable Brink, I welcomed you. I started with you. I know that you are here as well. Then I was still saying, let's make sure that we respect the decorum of this house committee meeting, then we should then start with our meeting. As and when we start, you will all agree with me that this year marks the fifth cycle of local government elections since the inaugural elections on the 5th of December 2000. The preparation for the 2021 electoral cycle are unique, as we all know that they are taking place under unusual circumstances. The COVID-19 pandemic and the looming possible third wave of infection is a new challenge that has not been encountered during the previous electoral cycles. You will all also recall that we have held several by-elections that have taken place in various municipal areas over the few months. And to us, I think it has provided yourselves as the commission, Commissioner Love and the CEO, an opportunity to test the implementation of your COVID-19 health protocols. However, it cannot be taken for granted that this experience has prepared yourselves as the IEC sufficiently to host countrywide elections in the context of a pandemic. As a committee, colleagues from the IEC would therefore like to understand the adjustments that you have made, to tackle the challenge on the broader national scale. The advantage of also holding the local government election after the national and provincial election is that yourself as the IEC, you are afforded an opportunity to look back and reflect on the lessons learned from the provincial and the national election. And then it therefore also provides an ample scope for the commission to identify and mitigate all the factors that have the potential to compromise the integrity of the elections. As a committee, therefore, we also like to further deliberate around these factors and how they have been taken into account in respect of the upcoming elections. The other issue that one wants to raise is around the administration of local government elections, which tends to be more complex and therefore more challenging than the administration of both national and provincial elections. We have, as yourself as the IEC, you have noted it on other platforms. In a national and provincial election, there are 10 elections in total. In 2021 municipal election, there will be a total of 4,725 unique elections, comprising of 4,468 ward elections, 8 metropolitan council elections, 205 local council elections, and 44 district elections. The pandemic, as well as the worrisome budget cuts to the yourselves as the commission, has added an extra layer of complexity to the process itself. This therefore calls for all the affected stakeholders to go an extra mile to surmount these challenges and deliver another successful round of credible, free, and fair elections. Our responsibility as this committee is to ensure that all relevant role players are doing their part to make this happen. I should think you will agree with me, colleagues. This is the objective that informs our engagement today. Having said that, then, I should then hand over to Commissioner Love, if there's anything that you want to say as an overview to the presentation that the CEO is going to present to us, After that, I will also allow the chairperson of the Municipal Demarcation Board to do the same. Then Deputy Minister Mapela will also then introduce the presentation by the department itself. Over to you, Commissioner Love.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. From my side, I think that the CEO and the team will cater for all of the various things. If there are questions, we can deal with those later on in discussion if there's time for that, Chair. But thanks very much for the invitation, and we hope it's a good session.
Thank you, Commissioner Love. Can I then hand over to the CEO? Mr. Sai Mamabulo, you can also then quickly introduce the colleagues that they are here. I just mentioned the two deputy CEOs, but I think for the benefit of the members, you can also mention their names.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Salutations to the Deputy Minister, members of the committee, colleagues, parliamentary staff. I'm joined by the two deputy CEOs, Mr. Masego Shebori, who is responsible for electoral operations. And we also have Mr. Mawetu Mozri, who's responsible for outreach. And obviously, the delegation is led by the vice chairperson. Without wasting time, I'm going to go into the detail of the presentation, and the whole team will then tackle questions that members of the committees may have after the presentation. And perhaps we start at an obvious point, and that is that Section 159 of the Constitution, read with Section 24 of the Municipal Structures Act, provides that a term of a municipal council is 5 years. After the expiry of that 5 years, an election must be held within 90 days. So in the present case, the term ends on the 4th of August, and the 90-day period takes us to the 1st of November 2021. So we all know that general elections in the country have traditionally been held on the Wednesday, with 2 days preceding that designated for special votes. The minister is responsible for the determination of the date after consultation with the commission. We can confirm that those consultations have commenced, but they are yet to be finalized. So once they're finalized, I'm sure that the minister will be in a position to take the country into a confidence in relation to the precise date of an election. Now, in terms of the road to local government election 2021, in 2018, the Municipal Demarcation Board had already dealt with technical outer boundaries redeterminations. And in 2019, the IC provided the municipal segments of the National Common Voters Roll based on the final registration figures for the elections in 2019. And the minister has determined formally for the determination of the number of councillors for the different categories of municipalities, whereafter the MECs did the actual determination of the number of councillors, which then allowed the Municipal Demarcation Board to commence with the ward delimitation process. And that process of what limitation the board will talk about in much more detail. But one can confirm that the board handed the final words to the IEC in December last year. Initially, we had planned to finalize that process as the two entities in August, but due to the disruptions owing to the COVID pandemic, we had to adjust the dates, and we received the final words in two installments. The first installment was in September, and the last installment was in December. So since October last year and the end of March, we've been busy aligning voting district boundaries to the ward boundaries. There are a number of voting districts which were split by ward boundaries. So that work we've been involved in and aligning, and I'll talk a little bit more detail about that in a few minutes. We will then in this month until the end of May be going to certain communities that have been split, or rather those that have been affected by the ward split, to re-register them either in new voting districts or in adjacent voting districts. So that work will commence now in April and conclude at the end of May. We anticipate that we would have a registration weekend in May, June, July. A date still has got to be determined, and the determination of date is contingent on the date of an election, because you want to have the registration, the general registration weekend, as close as is practically possible to the election itself. So until the finalization of the consultation process, the determination of the date for the registration weekend is indeterminate. We anticipate then that the candidate nomination period will be between July, August this year. And then we'll have 2 days of special voting, and we'll announce, the commission will then declare the results within 7 days. And within 14 days, then the elections of local representatives to district councils. The cessation of by-elections, this is a subject that the committee dealt with as part of the amendments to the Municipal Structures Act. Now, in terms of the present provisions, in other words, the provisions that don't take into account the recent amendments. By-elections may not be held for vacancies arising from the 1st of May 2021. However, the by-elections may still be held beyond this date if the vacancy arose before the 1st of May. So it is only vacancies which arise from the 1st of May, that there's an option not to have a by-election. The MECs for local government have to make a determination that that by-election must stand over. In other words, there has to be a purposeful determination by the MEC to say that this by-election must stand over. in line with this provision. Now, in terms of the amended version of the Structures Act, which we don't know when it will take, when the commencement date will be. But in terms of that amended version, by-elections may not be held for vacancies that arise from 1st February 2021, and 1st February being 9 months to the general election, counting the 9 months at the outer possible date, which is 1st of November. Now, we've already passed 1st February, but the law can be applied retrospectively. Therefore, the effective date for by-elections, for cessation of by-elections in terms of the new provisions of the Structures Act will be the date of the commencement of the Act, still to be determined by the President. Currently, there are two sets of by-elections that we are working on. 15 wards for the 21st April by-election and 40 wards on the 19th of May. The electoral system has not changed. Is the mixed member proportional system, where 50% component of council is constituted by ward councillors, and the other 50% constituted by PR councillors. Voters in metropolitan municipalities will receive two ballots, one for each election type, and voters in local municipalities will receive an additional ballot for the PR component of the district council. I won't deal with this. These are matters that you, the committee dealt with. We also have sponsored via the Minister of Home Affairs an electoral laws amendment bill, which has now been passed by both houses of parliament. And briefly, these are some of the key themes that the bill dealt with. Firstly, to increase the registration levels of political parties. What we mean by that is, currently you could either register a party at the municipal level or at the national level. So we are increasing a dispensation of registration to allow a district registration as well as a provincial registration, because some of the requirements, if you are in a province, you believe that your political interest is only in that province, you needed to register at the national level and to comply with UNRRA's requirements for registration at that level, whereas you could just register at the provincial level because you are a party with a provincial interest only. So we've increased those registration levels. We've provided for a voting procedure in respect of voters for whom we still do not have addresses. I'll talk to that issue a little later on. But the strategic import of that amendment is that persons for whom we don't have an address don't lose their right to vote. They will retain their right to vote, but there are certain administrative procedures they need to comply to before they can exercise the vote. In other words, they've got to furnish an address, or in the absence of an address, a description of the place where they are ordinarily a resident, and a determination then will be made whether either that address or the place of ordinary residence is within the ward at which they are voting. If it is within the ward, then they'll vote in the ward election. But if it's not, it's outside of the ward, Eastern students, and that they can't vote, they can't influence the electoral outcome over a place in which they are not resident. But they will vote in the PR election and so on. We are also clarifying the effective date for the electoral code of conduct. We are balancing the right to privacy of personal information and the right to freedom of expression in the publication and the acquisition of the voter's roll. A very vexing exercise to balance the who is entitled a copy of the voter's roll and under what circumstance, and on the one hand, and on the other, protecting the private information of voters and so on. So we believe that we have struck a very judicious balance between those otherwise competing rights. We've rationalized the need for the submission of an acceptance of nomination, and we've removed the ballot paper statement, and will revise the ballot paper statement and include it in the election regulations. The number of municipalities is 8 metropolitan municipalities, 205 local municipalities, and 44 district councils. After the work that the MECs, the minister, the MECs, and what the board have done, the total number of seats in municipal councils, there's just a marginal increase of 1.9%, taking the tally to 10,479. I think that we can look at your leisure. I had already indicated that after the board handed over the final awards, we needed to update our network of voting districts in preparation for the general registration weekend. And that work involved the following activities. The updating of the voting districts in accordance with the recent population movements since 2019. There may be new settlements that have since come to the fore, for which we now may need to provide an additional voting station. We needed to adjust voting districts that have been split to ward boundaries so that there's proper alignment between voting districts and ward boundaries. We needed to identify venues to be used as voting stations, and then to consult with municipal party liaison committees on the voting district boundaries and the choice of venues to be used. So I can confirm, Chairperson and members of the committee, that work is now, the field work is now concluded in respect of this. What is currently happening is now a desktop exercise of integrating the proposals received from the ground into our GIS and into our corporate database. So we are happy that we've been able to do that within the time that we had allocated. So there's been 1,123 voting districts that have been split by the wards, and you'll see there that the provincial breakdown of the split. Obviously, the greater the number of voting districts, there's the high propensity for splits in Gauteng and in KwaZulu-Natal. Those are the number of voting districts, as I said, in conjunction with the number of wards for 2021. So I won't belabor that. Now, this is the status update of the work that is completed on GIS. There are provinces that are complete, the Free State and the Northern Cape there, they demonstrate a very low percentage, but that is not a factor of the work having not been done on the ground. The groundwork is done, the submissions are made. It is just the sequencing of GIS processes at the desktop level. So don't be too overly concerned with that. The situation will be corrected because as we move from one province to the next. Now, this is the a picture of the historical growth of the voters' roll since it was first established in 1999. As of the last month, we were at 26.2 million voters on the roll. The issue is that we lose on average 35,000 voters per month from the roll, because if you look at the 2019 figure and the March figure, there's been a significant increase. The reason is that on a monthly basis, there's an average of about 35,000 voters that are lost due to mortality. I won't believe that that's the split. We have slightly 55%. Women on females on the roll, and 45% are male. And you that's the provincial split of the provincial and gender split. The age bands of the voters' roll. across all the nine provinces, you'll see that the 18 and 19 year olds, we have 54,000 of them, and this is a challenge for us. We are working with the Department of Basic Education to do an annual program of voter education in the schools in this month of April. We will be launching that program provincially in the not too distant future. And part of the exercise includes doing voter education classes and as well as registering students or learners onto the voters. So that's one intervention that we are looking at. We are also working at introducing an electronic registration modality with necessary safeguards. The reason we're doing so is because most of the young South Africans, they converse, their normal political conversations happen on mobile gadgets, be they iPads or smartphones and so on. So their own public engagement conversations don't happen in community halls or on newspapers or that's not the case, but they happen on social media platforms via smartphones and so on. So if you're going to attract them into the electoral experience of the country, you've got to engage them at that level. So hence we are providing for an opportunity for them, everybody, but in particular them, to enlist themselves electronically. And details about that will be launched by the Commission once the registration tool is completed. It is currently under development. Status of addresses on the voters' roll. Ahead of the 2016 elections, we had 8.4 million complete addresses. Currently, we have 24.6 million complete addresses. Now, I think I need to point out that although the bulk of these complete addresses are your conventional address, in a sense that there'll be a stamp number or a house number, maybe a street name and a town name. A bulk, if one were to analyze them, a bulk of that would subscribe to that a conventional address formulation. We've also accommodated rural type addresses, as well as farm type addresses, because you cannot adopt a one standard, because the nature of human settlements in the country are not the same. There are instances of farm addresses where it's a plot number in Driehoek and so on, and that is competent as a complete address for the type of settlement. Similarly, with rural addresses, there's a convention that we've worked on to say this type of address in a rural context, it's a complete address, which may not have the same attributes as a complete address in an urban setting. So the potentially incomplete addresses, we've reduced those to 252,000, and persons still with no addresses on the roll at the moment is 1.2 million, representing 4.7%. Now, that I think is a matter that you may take interest in. We have made a legal provision that would allow this 1.2 million people to vote on election day. They, however, will have to furnish an address or a place where they live if there is no address. Sufficient particularities, as the Constitutional Court referred to them. So no one is losing their right to vote, yet at the same time, people would have to comply to the Constitutional Court ruling by either providing an address or place of ordinary residence. So that you can look at your leisure. This is the provincial breakdown of the status of addresses on the roll. And this a graphic presentation of per municipality of the incidence of no addresses on the voters' roll. The lime color, it's a municipality where between 1% and 3% of voters in this municipality don't have an address. And the blue, sky blue, is between 4% and 6%, and the yellowish is between 7% and 8%. So you want your municipality really to be as close as possible to the line color, because you want to reduce the incidence of people without addresses. So you can look at that at your leisure. You could see though that the areas or in the former homelands on the eastern part of the country is where the problem is accentuated as compared to the incidence of persons without addresses on the western part of the country. There's also a provincial breakdown. So you can look at those maps at your leisure. The complete address, the same story. The commission has been engaged in an extensive stakeholder engagement process. Both within the state and outside of the state. We're participating in the Inter-Ministerial Committee on Elections, at NET joint at the South African Police Services. We've been meeting with business, traditional leaders, the diplomatic corps, civil society in their different formations and so on. So we are continuing with that extensive stakeholder engagement process. The commission has just approved its the logo and all the creatives that are going to underpin the communication campaign for these elections. We are currently working on our advertisements so that they can get approved, and then we'll go into a production phase with our communication strategy. The communication strategy will still be anchored on public radio and community radio, a bit of television, but a component that will increase on this occasion is social media, because as I indicated earlier, there's a significant proportion of the voting public who engage their political life takes place via social media platforms and so on. So the commission has to find an even greater presence in the social media landscape to be able to engage with those South Africans whose political lives are found on social media. We've just appointed, or we are in the process of appointing, municipal outreach coordinators who will be coordinating our voter education efforts in each municipality. But again, our voter education, because of the COVID circumstance, is going to be less on a person-to-person interaction, but broadly on radio in all official languages, as well as on social media. So there'll be that tactical shift in terms of the modality of delivery for voter education. The recruitment and training of staff, we have a recruitment and selection policy or recruitment and selection criteria that we've agreed with the national party liaison committees. And the part of the process of appointment includes the vetting of staff by municipal party liaison committees, and where people are known to be active in particular political party structures, then objections may be raised against those persons, and then we act to remove them. So our recruitment phase is commencing now for the registration weekend, and we will then get into the training phase. We are looking at 58,000 staff for the registration weekend and 207,000 for the actual elections themselves. And then some key innovations in terms of at the technology level. The voter management devices have now been procured. We are signing contracts tomorrow for the delivery of new voter management devices. These devices are replacing the legendary ZipZip machine. A ZipZip machine, obviously, it was a technology of its time. It has served the country so well over the past 20 years or so. But the new imperatives around addresses and ensuring that people are registered in the correct documents require a new type device. So we've responded to that by designing, specifying a device that will be able to integrate business processes, register a person, capture their address, ensure that the person is registered based on that address in the right segment of the voter's roll. We've just revamped our public website for easy navigation and for ease of communication. We are working on a reporting app for disinformation on social media. We had done this work in the last election with Media Monitoring Africa. We are partnering again, yet we are also developing our own business application where people can lodge complaints about disinformation. We will have a team of experts who will evaluate the complaints and make recommendations to the commission, which may include asking the social media platforms for takedowns, for closing of accounts if that is necessary, and those types of things. So it's going to be a partnership between experts in the field, social media platforms themselves, and the commission. For purposes of training, we are introducing e-learning modules for the training of our staff, especially module one, which is really about the ethos of the constitution and how the commission functions within the whole constitutional edifice. We are also providing a PPE for our registration and electoral staff. Some of these pictures are samples of the things that we had provided for in the by-elections in November, especially, and we found them to have worked well. A few key things: voters are going to be asked to bring along a pen. We will have pens at the station. However, we are encouraging people to bring their pens so that there is no exchange of pens, and hopefully by so doing preclude possibilities of cross-transmission of the virus between people. We change in the dispenser for the indelible ink. The previous dispenser looked like a cookie pen, and we would apply it on everyone. We are proposing to use an earbud for use against one person. So it will be a single use issue of the cotton bud. You can see that on the bottom right-hand side of the picture there. And obviously the basic protocols of social distancing, wearing of masks and so on. We will, for home visits and hospital visits and so on, will provide a higher level of PPE in those circumstances because people may be going into people's homes and whose level of infection we're not sure about. So in those cases, we're going to be providing for a higher level of PPE. So there are some challenges, obviously, as with any a program of this magnitude. One of the key issues around elections in the country is that there's an inverse relationship in terms of turnout between national and provincial election, where there's a continuous decline in the rate of participation. And in the local government elections, it is almost inverse in the sense that in 2000, we had 48% turnout. In 2006, 48. In 2011, 57. And we then had a single digit increase in 2016. It is our desire that for 2021, we get into the 60% time in terms of turnout. And we really have got to partner with political parties, media agencies, civil society, which is why we started this extensive program of stakeholder engagement that I spoke about, to try to ensure that as many persons who are registered do take part in their elections. We all are aware that because of COVID, all departments have had to have their budget reduced. That is the case at the IEC too. As a result, the IEC on this occasion will only be able to offer the country a single registration weekend instead of the normative two. The heightened political contestation, just to illustrate what we're talking about, in the local government elections, we seem to have the number of political parties increasing. In 2000, we had a total of 79 parties participating in those elections. And that is national, municipal, all the way out. And then in 2016, we had over 200 different political parties contesting those elections. By way of candidates, in 2000, we had 30,000 candidates, but in 2016, we had over 63,000 candidates. Our projection is that in this election, we'll probably have over 70,000 candidates contesting the election. With that then comes the issues around the size of your ballot paper, and then which you need to provide for. But if your ballot paper gets bigger, it also means you now need more ballot boxes, because a ballot box can only carry so much volume. So if your size of your ballot paper increases, it means you need more to carry greater volume. But not only that, your rate of litigation also increases. You have more objections which you need to deal with. Some of them end up in the electoral court with greater increase in litigation costs. The demarcation disputes, I did indicate that the board had already dealt with the technical amendments to municipal boundaries. But we know that there may be communities who remain aggrieved by the nature of demarcation they have. And they'll vent this, they'll bring up the issues during the registration weekend and during the elections themselves. So we have raised this issue in the inter-ministerial committee, so that it must be managed by those that are responsible for managing matters such as those. The issue of social unrest and community protests, which end up being taking place during the registration weekends, where people complain about electricity or a tarred road and so on, but they don't want the voting station to open. So, Chair, I think I'll leave it at this, and Commissioner Love and the colleagues who can then tackle questions that members of the committee may have. Thank you very much for your audience.
Thank you so much, CEO. If you can then maybe remove, yes, it's removed, the presentation from the screen. Chairperson Manyoni, as the CEO is loading the presentation on the screen, can I hand over to you?
Oh, thanks, my chairperson, members of the committee, my colleagues from IEC, our colleagues from SALGA, the officials present in this meeting, of course, Mam Kalipi, and also my sister, the Medi Reko. You are acknowledged. Let me also take the opportunity to acknowledge the presence of our Deputy Minister, Ralebo Antat. Chairperson, as the presentation from IEC has indicated, yes, we have finalized the process of ward delimitation under these difficult conditions. We have handed over to IEC so that it can also prepare with some of the work. As we indicated in our earlier engagement, my chairperson, we indicated that even though we are technically, we have finalized the work, we are not going just to disappear from the scene. We need to go back to communities where there are requests for us to come and explain how did we come to the conclusions that we came to, explain our decisions and so forth. So we are engaged in that process. Obviously, the intention, the chairperson, one, is to ensure that the potential voters, the electorate, are properly informed. And two, obviously, to make sure that at least we have smooth elections in terms of the forthcoming local government elections. I must indicate, Chairperson, there have been many areas, communities, where they are making requests for us to come, explain those decisions and so forth. For instance, this coming Friday, I and my team will also be in KwaZulu-Natal to address the community KwaMashu on our decisions. The end of the month, that is last week, we were also in some areas, including Sakhisizwe in the Eastern Cape, also doing the same. Of course, Chairperson, we know that even if we have gone all the way to try to explain and so forth, there will still be areas where communities will still not be happy for one reason or another. For instance, as one example, in Sakhisizwe, even though Inkosi Zangethwa was also there, including councillors and so forth, they decided in that meeting that no, they are not accepting the final outcome of the demarcation. But of course, we had to explain that if that be the case, they are allowed by the law, the act, to go to court. But they just indicated they are not even interested in the processes, the legal processes. There will just be blood on the floor and so forth. But those are issues that we normally also have to deal with. Yes, we are also taking into consideration and noting those areas which others might call potential hotspot areas. We report those areas into the joint committee meetings, that is safety, to make sure that at least as we prepare for elections, the relevant agencies, departments are aware where there could be a potential instability as we move forth and be able also to assist in being prepared for local government elections in handling some of those areas. But our intention, Chairperson, is we must go back to communities where we are requested and be able to explain ourselves with that intention of ensuring that at least the elections should be smooth. Sometimes some of the communities, they accept, they are happy with explanations. In some, as I indicated, they don't. But again, I think it is in the nature of these activities to have those type of issues and so forth. With that introduction, my Honorable Chairperson, I would like to hand over back to you and maybe for our CEO to be able to give the presentation. Thanks very much, my Chairperson.
Thank you so much, Chairperson Manyoni. Can we hand over to the CEO, Mr. Sigidi, to proceed with the presentation? And I want to, before you do that, let me welcome our colleague, Honorable Hendricks. He's part of us. Also, Councillor Stofile has since joined us. We tendered your apology earlier, Councillor Stofile. Over to you, Mr. Sigidi.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members and colleagues, as well as the Deputy Minister. I'm just going to go straight into the ward delimitation process. I'll skip the number of slides that we have already presented here. And like the IEC has indicated, there are certain slides that I will also skip because the IEC has touched those. And there are a few others that I will also skip because I saw them in the presentation of the department. So if you may allow, Chair, let me not dwell much on the slide that is indicated there, which just give us the summary of the mandate of the board. we have already handed over the wards to the IEC in December last year. I want to start from slide number 12. When we started with the process, Chair and Honourable Members, we started by providing communities and stakeholders with an opportunity to have an input into the draft words that we had put together. And within that particular process, because we had divided municipalities into batch one and batch two, with batch one being those municipalities that we had made consultation face to face, and batch two with those that we consulted virtually. There were two closing dates for the submissions and the inputs that were solicited. That was the 31st and the 31st of May and the 31st of July. We received these submissions from various communities and individuals, political parties, traditional leaders, and other stakeholders. Overall, we received 1,206 submissions as at the end of the period of submissions. And out of those, 31% were rejected, and 838, which represent around 74%, were accepted and were taken to the publication for objections. I'll come back to that. Now, after this period of submission, when we had put the draft words, then we published those words for objections. And similarly, for objections of batch one municipalities, the closing date was between the 3rd and the 12th of August. And for batch two municipalities, it was between the 1st and the 7th of October. Overall, we received a total of 1,465 objections, and the board considered those objections, and 10% of the wards were configured and were accordingly varied as a result of the objections, with 89 or 90% of the wards confirmed as published in the initial stage of the submission. I will also indicate, Chair, the reasons or the reasons that we use for objections. Now, this is just a slide that is indicating the total number of objections per province. You will realize that we have the highest province in terms of objections was Mpumalanga, followed by Eastern Cape, and the least was Northern Cape, where we only received two objections. With regard to the 90% and the 10% that I've referred to earlier, that is the distribution in terms of provinces. You will see that the number of wards that were varied, the province that had the highest number of wards that were varied was KwaZulu-Natal, followed by Northwest. Now, the reason for the board to not consider submissions or objections or to reject those was the following: most of them did not comply to the norm, which seems to be the primary objective, and some of them created unnecessary splits in the voting districts. Some did not align to fiscal features. Some proposed a non-contiguous ward, and in other instances, it was unnecessary splits. Splitting communities, And the others were what the CEO of IEC referred to, were affecting outer boundaries. And we were not going to be dealing with outer boundaries as we have communicated to the public earlier. This slide is just indicating of all the timelines that we had had, and we have all the timelines were met. And I will want to go to the potential risk areas that the chairperson has indicated. With regard to these areas, we identified this during the process of redetermination. Most of the issues that were raised were communities that were dissatisfied with municipal boundaries. And in certain instances, it was those areas where there are unresolved dissatisfaction with municipal boundaries, with provincial boundaries. And then there was also a general dissatisfaction with the ward delimitation process and objections to the final outcome. And the nature of those can be summarized as one, communities who were unhappy with the areas that were not delimited into one ward, even though the number of registered voters in those areas does not allow. There were also some communities who were unhappy that after their proposal was accommodated by the board in the publication for objections, the MDB changed the words after considering the objections to what they do not want. Chair, I think I just need to explain this one a little bit because it created a little bit of confusion amongst communities and the stakeholders that made submissions. When communities were making submissions to the demarcation board on the wards that we had published for submission and just to make an input on how you want your the ward to be configured, once we publish the ward for objection, an individual or communities who realize that their input and submission were catered, they didn't bother to either support what we had published. And we only found that when you receive an objection from a person who is objecting, because that is the legal process, then it became problematic to those people who saw the word as the one that they had participated in configuring. So that is what the Roman figure 2 is all about. And there were complaints that they were not consulted before the final wards were delimited, and that some were demanding that the wards should be the same as in 2016. The area that the chair referred to in Kwamashu that is going to address is one of those areas where they wanted the ward to be like in 2016. But they submitted their objection a little bit, in fact, very late, because they submitted to us this year in February. Now, those are just the areas in terms of provinces where we have the risk. In Eastern Cape, Ntabankulu, the community in Mzimkulu Ward 17, they wanted to be Ntabankulu wanted to be moved to Mzimkulu, and we have already communicated to this person and notified the individuals and to indicate that this is a matter that will be dealt with after the local government elections, and this is one of the areas that the chairperson had to go and deal with. We have Buffalo City. People were unhappy about the outcomes of the delimitation process and that their objections and related proposals for several wards were not accepted as they were not compliant to the criteria. We have responded to this particular one. We are also presenting in Buffalo City on Friday to the IGR forum there on the outcome of the Buffalo City municipality. The circuses were local municipality, that's what the chair was emphasizing. Msinga, this one was a classical one in KZN. When the board published for objections, we got information that there were communities who were digging the road. And at the time that they were digging the road, the time for objection was ending. And the chairperson had to address the community leaders on the 20th of October after the whole process. Then we had Ndwendwe, where there was the dissatisfaction with the consideration of objection of two wards, and the details of the outcome of the process were provided to those. Etekwini, that's the matter that the chair has referred to. And in Gauteng, we had a matter around Mirafo, and also in the city of Joburg, Ward 112, where the chairperson addressed the matter in Ward 112 in Gauteng. In Limpopo, we have those that are more the outer boundary issue, the Fitakomu Tuva, the local municipality, and the Makado Musina Turamela Collins Chavane local municipality. There is an application that we have now received from Fitakomu. They want to go back to what they were. They don't want to be amalgamated to the new municipality. Similarly with Mutare. And I think those are the matters that the committee can go through. We have shared with the IMC on election all of these matters, and also to the security cluster as the security cluster, as the chair has indicated. Now, in terms of analysis of the 2021 wards against the 2016 wards. Chairperson, you note that earlier on we were saying, some of the communities were saying, we want our wards to be similar to what they were in 2016. Now, at the beginning of the process, there was an assumption that if the formula that is put forward by the minister is not changing the number of councillors, it might mean that the 2016 wards could be retained. When we were busy with the process, we realized that there are a number of factors that I will refer to at a later stage. But in our analysis, we realized that we had Gauteng and Mpumalanga. Those are the two provinces whose wards never changed. Whose councillors, number of councillors never changed, but they were only able to retain 37% and 23% of their ward boundaries. Limpopo increased the number of councillors by two from the 2016, but were only able to retain 48% of the wards. Similarly, Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, Northern Cape, the same happened. And at a national level, the only number of wards that were retained were 36%, which is 1,605. And this, in summary, just means that retaining the boundaries of wards is almost impossible due to constant changes and variations in the voter registration across the country. This is just the next slide is just the illustration per province in terms of the number of wards in all the provinces compared with the number of councillors compared to the number of councillors in 2021. And the number of wards that have been retained, which I've referred to in the slide above. The next slide, I've referred to the minister revising the formula and advising MECs to, as far as possible, maintain the 2016 number of councillors. two provinces, Mpumalanga and Gauteng, retained the number of councillors. But we then realized that while the MDB is accused of destabilizing municipalities when delimiting wards, there are factors which amongst others influence the configuration of wards. One is the formula published by the minister to determine the number of councillors. If the number of councillors are going to change, it automatically means that the number of wards are also going to be changed. The second factor is the determination of the councillors by MECs, because they are allowed a deviation to what the minister has determined. And once they deviate and increase the number of councillors in their respective provinces, it automatically influences the wards in that particular province. The third one is the pattern of voter registration. You will have seen in the presentation of the IEC the increase in the number of voters over the years. And that increase means that in one area they might be in migration, and in other areas they might be out migration. And that will affect the norm of each and every ward in each and every municipality. And the last one is inputs from stakeholders and members of the public during the delimitation process, as well as all the issues around the objections. So those are the factors that really determines whether the number of councillors are, the ward is going to be varied in terms of special content and form. This slide, I'm not going to go to it. The IEC has referred to it just to indicate that out of the 22,924, only 5% of the voting districts were split, and that affected around 37% of the wards, 1,636. This is just a map that is showing one ward that never changed in one municipality in Nyandeni, and I don't want to sit on that one. The next one is just indicating one ward that was split in Mukhalakwena. You can see where the arrow is pointing. We have split that voting district, Nkakaveli Secondary School, into two wards, which is Ward 30 and Ward 25. The other matter, Chairperson, is we have noted that there are quite a number of municipalities that have reached their maximum number of councillors. Your city of Joburg have reached the ceiling. Polokwane, Mbombela, Mfuleni and Rustenburg have also reached the ceiling. Now, this means that any increase in the number of voters in these municipalities is not going to change the number of councillors, which therefore means that what will change is an increase in the norm. We can give an example of the city of Joburg, where the norm has now increased in terms of the average number of voters in each of the ward of the city of Joburg. So the rise in the registered voters of these municipalities will not increase the number of councillors, but will increase the average number of voters, which is the norm of the municipality. And this, Chairperson, will bring the issue of the formula to a sharp scrutiny. We know that the current amendment of the Structures Act only dealt with the minimum and not the maximum in terms of municipalities. Next slide. This slide, Chairperson, is just the implication that or the impact that the Municipal Structures Act Amendment Bill will have on our processes. The bill, as it was passed by the National Assembly on the 16th of March, has an indication that Section 20 of the Structures Act has to be amended, and the minimum number of councillors should be 10 and not more than 90. Now, from the list of municipalities that we have in the country, we have four municipalities in the country that have got less than 10 councillors. We have one in the Northern Cape and three in the Western Cape. Now, with the one in the Northern Cape, there won't be serious implication because we already have five wards there. But the rest of the three, Canaland, Linesburg, and Prince Albert, will have to do something there. Now, if the new provision is to take effect before or on the date of the local government elections, the MDP will have to delimit wards for the three Western Cape municipalities. The three municipalities in the Western Cape will most likely have three extra councillors, as they each have seven councillors. And that will translate into one extra ward for each one of them. And once we bring that one extra ward, it means we'll have to deal with the determination of all the wards in each of those three municipalities. The MDP will then, after the determination of the new number of councillors by MEC in the Western Cape, restart the ward delimitation process for those municipalities. Now, if we have to comply to the amendments, these are the steps that need to follow. I'm just indicating this, Chair, because we, from our side, we then decided to say, let's look at the options that may need to happen if the President signs the amendment into law. But we were saying if he signs it, maybe in April or May. The MEC must publish a correction of the number of councillors and publish the notice. And then the board will have to calculate the number of wards and the norms and the variances and then configure the draft wards. So we have put two options. And in terms of the normal MDP processes, we have option one, and then if we have to skip one process that is not legislated and go to the legislated process, we will have option two. The details of option one is in the next slide, where we are saying in May, we may have the publication of the number of councillors by MECs, and then we'll configure the draft wards and then provide the draft wards to the public and request for input in June and receive and analyze those submissions in June. And in July, we consider those inputs. But the whole process will mean that we'll hand over the wards to the IEC in August. The implication might be with all the processes that the CEO talked about earlier, can the IEC be able to deal with the voting districts, communicate where there are changes and all those kind of things if we are handing over the wards in August? Option two is where we skip one process of input and go straight into the legal process. That will make us to hand over the wards in July 2021. Still, we have to consider the IEC in terms of what is it that can the IEC processes be truncated in that short space of time. Now, these are some of the issues that we were thinking that maybe is some matters which might require that we get some resolutions on. Either the law is assented to by the President in April, or alternatively we say maybe the election might need to happen on the outer end of the period around November, but that will be determined by how the IEC may be able to respond to whatever would have been handed over to them in July or in August, which is also dependent on whether the act will be assented into law by the President earlier. The MEC local government in Western Cape must publish a correction notice as early as possible, considering that the IEC still has to finalize the registration process in various VDs. Or alternatively, we say the elections of the three municipalities is postponed and be held in January 2022, which in our view is not desirable. Or the matter that we had discussed with the department some time ago to say maybe if the act is assented to, we then postpone the implementation of the amended section 2020 for it to be effective in 2026 local government elections. So Chairperson, that's the summary in terms of where we are. We still believe that all the stakeholders supported us to complete the process in time for us to hand over to the IEC. We also appreciate the support given by the Portfolio Committee and all stakeholders, including COCTA, provincial departments, traditional leaders, and law enforcement agencies, as well as all the municipalities. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, Mr. Sgidi. Councillor Stofile, as lunch is loading the presentation, can you then be making some overview or remarks? Then you'll hand over to lunch to do the presentation.
Thank you very much, Chair, and greetings to members of the Portfolio Committee, the IEC, the MTP. The only matter that the MTP Chair has forgotten to tell you is my dispute with them that they divide my house into two. The bedroom is on another ward and the sitting room is on another ward. But it's something that we need to discuss at some point in the future. Chair.
Proceed.
Thank you very much for giving us an opportunity to reflect. And this opportunity comes at a time after the NEC of SALGA have met and look into the transition from the current administration into the new administration on the date that it will be publicized insofar as elections is concerned in the local government. We have some views expressed because to us is a transition. The baton had to be handed over to others and they had to run their race and complete the race. And in this process, we said it is important as delegate as it is to be managed properly. And that is why we fully support the initiative taken by MDB to go and engage communities, because in our view, communities are the shareholders of this business that we're running called governance. And that is why we believe they are in the right track to interact and engage communities rather than allowing law enforcement to do the work in the absence of the leadership interacting with these communities. So our presentation, Chair, is going to talk to you in terms of what we see standing in their house and looking through the window, and how are we going to or suggesting to navigate going through there. And we really appreciate our interaction relations, because I'm told that dialectical relations are so important, and that is why the relations between SALGA, MTP and IEC, it becomes so important. And more important, the relationship between SALGA and COCTA as partner ring in dealing with matters that affect local government. I think Lance will then lead us on the presentation in terms of what is our view as the NEC of the SALGA with regard to these matters. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Councillor Stofile. Over to you, Mr. Joel.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson, and also greetings to yourself and members of the committee, the DM Bapela, MDB, and the leadership of the IEC, and colleagues. Chairperson, our presentation is quite different from what you have seen in the two previous presentations, as ours is much more forward-looking and with a particular and deliberate focus on the support we intend providing to our members. Much of this slide has been spoken to in the previous two presentations. The only key message we would want to send here is that whilst all of these things are happening pre, during, and post the elections, each of these key events trigger a particular action in our respective municipalities. So within the context of our mandate, ours is to ensure that there's a readiness on the ground within our members, but also there is a preparedness to usher in the new term of office and lay a strong foundation for the next term. So beyond what has been presented around dates and awards, etc., municipalities are going to require support during this transition, pre, during, and post the elections. At least at a technical level, we have agreed between ourselves, SALCA and COCTA, to partner in providing support to municipalities instead of running into different directions and running parallel processes, rather cooperate and work together in providing support to municipalities. The SALCA NEC, as Councillor Stofile said last week, approved what in our view is a framework for this transition, and it largely would be a guide to assist municipalities throughout the process itself. So there are a number of things, Chairperson and members, that we intend focusing on. Pre the elections, there are five key deliverables, starting with our preparation for receiving the new councillors come post the elections. But the work starts pre the elections, so the development of a comprehensive council induction program, which is a training program that lasts in all of the areas across the country, a full week training program for new and returning councillors. So we will develop, leading up to the elections, the actual induction manual that will be used for the training program. Secondly, we would also be developing guidelines as a governance support to municipalities, and we have just listed there for the committee's benefit, Chairperson, all of the materials we will be developing to assist municipalities and also mitigate against what could potentially go wrong in the absence of guidance. So some work will go towards the development of terms of reference for municipal electoral offices. Obviously, this is work that also will be done by the IEC. We would be providing guidance to municipalities on funding for elections activities. We know that in the past, we were faced with numerous challenges where municipal funds were used in inappropriate ways towards election campaigns. So we will be assisting our members and providing specific guidance. And then so too all of the other things, Chair, I'm not going to list them individually. There would also be a focus, Chair, on the social plan for councillors. And this is having in mind the fact that some councillors are moving towards the end of the term. We therefore have to, as a starting point, ensure that each municipality has an asset register of all of those assets that councillors have in their position, so that by the time the elections come and councillors do not return, it would then be easier to try and repossess, in inverted commas, those assets that are in the possession of non-returning councillors. Also, as support, we would be looking at guidelines to assist those that will be withdrawing from pension funds, guidelines around the gratuity payment and related matters, and then also provide clarity around when does a councillor's salary end, what is the end date, and what is the start date for the newly elected councillor. So all of that will be guidelines that we would be developing. Then we would also prepare for the day one, meaning when a new council is elected, what is then to happen. There are a number of things, Chairperson, that would be required to happen. That first council meeting, we would be developing a guideline on what needs to be done in preparation for that council meeting, including what should be the agenda for that particular council meeting, looking at convening the Lekgotla of either the EXCO or the mayoral committee and what would be necessary to be considered by that particular Lekgotla. Because a number of municipal officials at a senior level, Honorable Chairperson, are reaching the end of their contracts of employment. We do foresee that there'll be an exit and a need to start the recruitment process, so we would develop guidelines on the appointment of senior managers to ensure that proper processes are indeed followed. And then there are a number of other things, Chair, as we list there and on the slide, that we will be specifically providing guidance on. All of these documents are developed pre the elections. And then the last part, Chairperson, in supplementing what would be done by the IEC around profiling the elections, ours would have a specific focus, and it is profiling local government itself, and hoping that we will be able to attract more people to come to the polling stations and then put the access. But our intention is really to drive a campaign that is going to increase awareness around what it is that people are going to vote for. What is this local government that we are always talking about? How is it structured? What are the governance processes, structures in the municipality, powers and functions, etc.? But also, we would also focus on showcasing what local government has done over the last 5 years in this current term of office, and we may even extend that to the 20 years of local government, so that we can increase awareness around what our the municipalities are doing on an ongoing basis. So post the elections, Chairperson, now that we have developed all of the guidelines, et cetera, we would then go into rollout mode. So we will roll out the countrywide induction program shortly after the election. So once councils have met within 14 days, both at the metro and the local level, followed by the districts having met after locals have appointed their district reps, we will then run this council induction, a one-week program for each municipality across the country. We will then also roll out the social plan, provide support to councillors who would want to, well, former councillors then, that would want to withdraw from pension funds, etc. Also, the guidelines we would have developed, preparing them for day one, we will then roll out all of these respective guidelines and provide direct support to members and continue the profiling work that we would have started in the pre-election phase. And here we would change the focus of the profiling. Now that the elections have taken place, new leaders have been elected, we would increase awareness around the convening of that first council meeting and what is going to happen in that council meeting. When we talk about mayors, the election of a mayor, the election of a speaker, and of a council whip, all of that would be covered through profiling. And then also we present an opportunity for the newly elected leaders to be profiled and give an indication of what they intend doing, what their plans are for the new term of office. And as I said, that is the profiling campaign that will be run post-election. Chair, as we are concluding this work, the NEC has now approved the framework. We have started the process of looking at developing the key documents, the guidelines, and we intend convening a special meeting of municipalities on the 13th and 14th of May this year. So in the next 6 weeks, we'll be convening that national meeting where we will be taking municipalities through these guidelines and get them to adopt guidelines as we prepare for the transition. So, so Chair, that's our presentation, and it's really for the committee to note. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Juan. If we can then allow a Deputy Minister Bapela to do some introductory remarks. I see Mr. Dr. Naidu has already shared the presentation. Welcome, DG. We had already received the apology that you're going to join the meeting later. You're welcome. Over to you, DM Mapela.
Thank you, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, Mayor Mthambi, and to all honorable members present in the meeting, members of the Portfolio Committee, and also to greet the IEC team led by Deputy Chairperson Commissioner Janet Love, and also the team of the MDB led by Ndade Thabo Manyoni, and then also the SAGA led by Ndade Stofile. And obviously from the COGTA, then we have the DG and other senior officials accompanying. The cabinet did approve the establishment of the Interministerial Committee on Local Government Elections, composed by quite a number of departments, ministers and deputy ministers, and is supported by a technical committee led by the DGs and other senior officials in it. Both the IMC and the technical committee have been meeting since 2020 to facilitate the preparations for 2021 local government elections. And the IEC and the MDB are part of these particular structures. There are five focus areas that we are involved in, and I think the presentation will elaborate on, but some of the issues have already been raised by the Municipal Demarcation Board. It's one of the focus on state of readiness. And the other second focus is the state of readiness by the IEC, and they've already presented on that one. Then the third area is the issue of safety and security work stream. Obviously, it's not the focus of the meeting today, but over a period of time, obviously, they will be invited by ourselves working with other portfolio committees because they cross to the security cluster. And the work stream is already beginning to do work in and monitoring on areas that are likely to see protests. Once more, the old areas and the new areas that will then be identified, working with the MDB, Matadiele and Malamulele being the others. But obviously, there will be more new areas that will then be coming on board. So there is that particular work stream as a focus. Then the fourth area, Chair, is the communication strategy on 2021 local government elections. The GCIS is working with government departments such as COGTA, the IEC, and MDB, and some of the elaboration work by the IEC and MDB is part of that particular evolving strategy for the upcoming elections. Obviously, the purpose of the communication strategy is to align how government will communicate key messages on the 2021 local government elections. And the strategy, obviously, is anchored on a number of research work that is there. And the last focus, Chair, will be on local government transitional matters, and SAGA has already elaborated on the plans, working with us also. There are those particular transitional matters that we'll be dealing with, including the payment of the gratuity for non-returning councillors. I think it is part of the plan. and the new councillors' inductions and then capacity building training issues will also be following in that particular regard. So you have already invited Dr. Naidu, Kevin Naidu, but because the DG is now back in the meeting, I'm not sure whether it's her first just introducing the team and then Dr. Naidu to then present. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Back to you.
Thank you. Okay, I said I had accepted the apology, and then she had said that then I do deal with this. Can we move to the questions, Dr. Naidu? Just to save time, over to you, Dr. Naidu.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. Good evening, Honourable Members. Deputy Minister Bapela, Chairperson of the Demarcation Board, Vice Chairperson of the IEC, and DG colleagues. Honourable Chair, a lot of what I was going to present has been covered by the previous presentation, so I'm going to try and be as swift as possible without repeating what has been said. So my presentation has been structured thus, to just give some background, deal with some of the key responsibilities of COCTA, which is developing the formulae for the number of councillors, the establishment of the IMC for elections. I was going to deal with some of the MDB activities. I'm going to skip that. I've not dealt with the IEC activities. I'm going to deal with, thirdly, the major milestone that, another milestone that the minister needs to deal with, which was referred to by the IEC. Some of the legislative amendments that we have in the pipeline. Some guidance that we would issue to municipalities, and then some recommendations at the end. So just to indicate that this is going to be the fifth elections that we would be having. And in preparation for those elections, in June and July of 2019, we had approached COCTA, the cabinet, to deal with two major issues, the first being the formulae for the number of councillors, and then secondly, to get approval for the establishment of the IMC on elections. On the first matter, the minister had published the formulae for the number of councillors on the 5th of July. And that formula basically looked like this. Simple straight line formulae, linear formulae that had a minimum and a maximum, which then resulted in a linear formula. Perhaps to respond to the issue raised, Honourable Chair, by the Demarcation Board in its one of its last slides, which indicated that, you know, the formula has resulted in the city of Johannesburg, for example, reaching its maximum of 270 municipalities. You know, to a large extent, the formulae is to deal with the delimitation of boards. And although the formulae presently would generate a maximum, or if the number of registered voters indicate that there should be more councillors, but because the law said that there is 270 as the maximum, the formulae can always be changed to make sure that one can keep within the confines. So, even though the formula is as it is published now, it can be changed to say that the present number of registered voters could generate 250 councillors, for example. So it is all about how we use our minimum and maxima to determine what the formula will generate eventually. So pursuant to the minister publishing the formula in the Gazette, 5th of July, provinces had then undertaken their responsibility to make determinations for each of the municipalities within their area of jurisdiction. And these are the dates that they have subsequently published their numbers. So you'd see for the Northwest, for example, in the initial publication that they had made, they had indicated that the Rustenburg municipality should have 91 councillors. We picked that up, we brought it to their attention, and then they had to issue a correction notice complying with the upper limit of 90 for that specific municipality. The Free State also had published their initial notice on the 30th of August 2019, and then issued a revised notice, a notice on the 14th of February, deviating in at least 4 or 5 municipalities with different numbers. And this notice was due to the advanced progress that the demarcation board had made already around ward delimitation, was rejected. So the rest of the dates of the provinces are indicated as reflected on that slide. Honorable Chair and members, this slide has been borrowed from the IEC, but what I'm going to touch on is the yellow highlighted row here, and this indicates the 60% of appointed councillors that we get from the family of locals within a district that are appointed. So they are not really warm separate bodies, but actually persons that do come up from the locals within the district. So if you want to get to the total number of councillors, at the bottom of column 2021, the 9469 would be a sum of the ward and the PR and the direct councillors as reflected on that column. DM Apela made mention of the IMC. It is constituted by these ministries reflected here, and then obviously chaired by our minister. We've also extended the IMC to include the chairperson of the IEC, the president of SALGA, as well as the chairperson of the demarcation board. We've met twice already, on the 18th of September last year, and then about 2 weeks ago, the 24th of March. The technical IMC chaired by the DG is a support structure for the IMC, composed of officials from those ministries that are benched already. We've met 17th of June, August, November, and February of this year. Our next meeting is scheduled for the 10th of May next month. So in the main, we've been discussing matters around ward delimitation, the IEC preparations for the elections, safety and security matters being reported to us by the security structures, and then the communication strategy from government around the preparations for the elections. Honorable Chair, I'm going to skip these slides because it has been covered already by the CEO of the Demarcation Board. And then to perhaps a couple of seconds on this slide to just show you the value chain of the entire electoral process. So initiated by the IEC handing over the common voters roll to the department, which was done, I think, on the 18th of March, 2019. The minister then determines the formula, and as I've indicated, published on the 5th of July. MECs then published their formulae in the Provincial Gazettes, and it was done between the period of July to August, etc. And then the board delimits wards and the final set handed over to the IEC at the beginning of December last year. So the third major milestone that the minister is responsible for, and as already alluded to by the IEC, is the calling and the setting of the date for the election, which would happen anytime between the 3rd of August and the 4th of November 2021. There's various criteria that must be considered. and as indicated by the IEC as well, discussions around this matter have begun already. So legislative amendments, it was indicated by the Demarcation Board as well, that the Structures Amendment Bill was processed by the National Assembly on the 16th of March 2021. I've just checked with the Bill's office earlier, and it was indicated that the Bill has been sent for assent as the proposed Act Number 3 of 2021. So it is probably with the President as we speak. And as you would know, we deal with various governance-related matters as well as electoral-related matters. But that's just a couple of things on this, Honourable Chair and members. So the implications for the four municipalities have been raised by the Demarcation Board, the three in the Western Cape, and the one in the Northern Cape, Renosterburg. So the one additional councillor in Renosterburg would be a pure councillor. So it would not be affecting the number of wards. But in the three in the Western Cape, we have begun discussions with the province, as well as informal engagements with the IEC and the Demarcation Board. And our advice has been that, you know, the implementation or the enactment of the legislation is impending. And with the view to that happening, the background work in relation to delimiting this additional ward in each of these places should commence. And as soon as the Act is operationalized, that back office work would have been done already. But perhaps to give some comfort to the IEC as well. So my understanding, and I've just cleared this with our legal, with our lawyers as well. So the Act would not take effect on the date of publication indicated by the President. The way it is phrased in the short title of the bill, soon to be Act, is that the Act is called the Structures Amendment Act and comes into operation on a date to be determined by the President by proclamation in the Gazette. So although the Act would be published as soon as the President signs, there would be another process that the Minister would have to pursue, giving a proclamation to the President indicating which of the sections which would become operationalized, perhaps on different dates. So it could mean that the matter relating to by-elections could be dealt with, as well as to say that the 10 councillors in each of these three or four municipalities would take effect on the date of the 2021 local government election. the other piece of legislation that is in the pipeline as well is the Systems Amendment Bill, presently doing its rounds as part of consultation in the provincial legislatures. I am aware that there was an engagement in the Gauteng provincial legislature on the 24th of February. I'm sure their colleagues have had supported other provincial legislatures in this regard as well. So Salga had mentioned the work that's going to be done collaboratively pre, post, and prior to the elections. This is some of the work that we had done in 2016. We had issued a circular to provide guidance on all of these issues that had to be processed before the elections and then after the elections as well. So this collaborative work that Mr. Joel had presented would be a combination of what is on the table at the SALGA table, as well as what the department is looking at in terms of what should be included in the guidance that we will provide to municipalities and to provinces. I think personally, what we would want to really elevate is, for example, Honorable Chair, you know, the matter that you had raised sharply, as well as Honorable Direko, when the structures bill was being considered in the committee, and the issue of the 2-year, let's say, cooling off period, which is a new kind of innovation in the structures bill, and to elevate it and to make it very clear that any breach of the code of conduct could have that consequence, and perhaps, you know, it could deter some bad practices that have been entrenched you know, assist in doing away with that. So perhaps, you know, when we do see how we want to craft our communique that we go out, we see how best to elevate it, and it being, you know, one of the matters that we really, really put out there. Suppose the 2016 elections, we were confronted with, you know, a new phenomenon, and the phenomenon of coalition municipalities. And I thought it's prudent to just include, you know, some information around the collective executive type of municipality. And let me be clear that it's not guidance that we're giving. It is just something that I'm bringing to the fore. And something, you know, that was in the public domain immediately after the 2016 election. So this is a quote from a constitutional law expert, Pierre de Fosse, and 5 days after the local government election. And he says that another wildcard option is that the MEC in the province is permitted to change a type of municipality to an executive type. Can do that by giving notice to SALGA in the province and the affected municipalities. But importantly, it provides for a forced power sharing agreement between all parties represented in a municipal council, in an exco, in proportion to the seats held by each party in the council. So more recently, in 2018 June, a further commentator indicated that under the collective executive system, the mayor plays a ceremonial role, with the real executive power residing in the exco. The exco has the inherent in its structure the necessary checks and balances to ensure that it is more difficult for the majority party to ride roughshod over the views of minority parties. The Municipal Structures Act could be amended to remove the executive mayoral option. And importantly, in my view, an outcome would be far less volatile municipalities and a more efficient and effective local governance system. And that the ultimate beneficiaries of such a shift would be the communities and the residents. So this table indicates, you know, post the elections, the 27 coalitions that had arisen. It indicates which of those municipalities had the mayoral executives, the collective executives, and if the exco system would have been in place, what some of those composition of the excos would have looked at that point in time. So, Honorable Chair and members would know that in the amendments to the Structures Act, we have dealt with amending Section 43 of the Act to a large extent doing away with an election process for the members of the Executive Committee, and to deal with it in a more determination kind of a process. So we indicated that in some of the challenges that we have discovered around the executive, in the collective executive type of municipality, was that, you know, municipalities did not apply a uniform formula across the country. We've rectified that by now prescribing a single formula. We believe much easier in implementation in terms of how executive committees would be composed once the bill is enacted. So Section 155 provides that national legislation must define the different types. That national legislation is the Structures Act. 155 of the Constitution says that provincial legislation must determine the different types. But importantly, the original Section 13 of the Structures Act provided for guidelines for selecting types. And it said that the minister may determine guidelines to assist MECs for local government to decide which type of municipality would be appropriate for a particular area. So therefore, my comment a couple of minutes ago that we're not guiding here, we're just bringing it to the attention of the committee, because the original Section 13 of the Structures Act was declared inconsistent with the Constitution and invalid in October of 1999. Honorable Chair, for the committee to note the preparations being made for the 2021 local government election. Note that COCTA, provincial COCTAs and SALDA, through various structures and forums, are engaging and preparing for the election. And that's my last slide, is that as of today, there's 119 days to the end of term four, which is the 3rd of August. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you so much, Dr. Naidu. DG Williamson, is there anything that you feel the presentation didn't cover that you want to add on?
Good evening, Honorable Chairperson, and to all the Honorable Members, to our Deputy Minister and colleagues. Chairperson, I'm adequately, or I'm satisfied that everything has been covered. Thanks so much. I'm happy.
Thank you. Can we then ask Dr. Naidu to remove the presentation on the screen, please? Yes, I allow members now to interact with the presentations. They will ask questions across the board. IEC note your questions. Demarcation board note your questions. SALGA note your questions. And the department, you must also note your questions as well. I'll start with Honorable Brink, followed by Honorable Groenewald, followed by Honorable Fraser, followed by Honorable Spies, followed by Honorable Mkalipi,